Our reading this morning is from Isaiah chapter 9, and Rob is going to come and read to us, and that after that, Jim will come and speak.
Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 to 7 from the Good News Bible. The future king. The land of the tribes of Zebulun and Naphtali was once disgraced, but the future will bring honour to the region, from the Mediterranean eastwards to the land of Jordan, and even to Galilee itself, where foreigners will live. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. They lived in the land of the shadows, but now light is shining on them. But you have given them great joy, Lord. You have made them happy. They rejoice in what you have done as people. Rejoice when they harvest their corn or when they divide the captured wealth. For you have broken the yoke that burdened them and the rod that beat their shoulders. You have defeated the nation that oppressed and defeated your people, just as you defeated the army of Midian long ago. The boots of the invading army and all their blood-stained clothing will be destroyed by fire. A child is born to us, a son is given to us, and he will be our ruler. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. His royal power will continue to grow. His kingdom will always be at peace. And he will rule as King David's successor, placing his power on the right and just from now until the end of time. Lord Almighty is determined to do all this. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, everybody. It's really good to be back with you again this morning, and lovely to see all the Christmas decorations and things up and the Advent candles lit, and just to be part of your worship time today. I wonder if you know how you got your name. As parents, we choose the names for our children for all kinds of reasons. Apparently, my mum wanted to call me James, and my dad wanted to call me Ian. So I got both. But my mum won, as she usually did, by getting James to be the first name. They also gave me a third name that I am too embarrassed to mention. We had no idea what our children were going to call our grandchildren. And then when the first four arrived, they all had names beginning with A. Aaron, Anna, Adam, and Abby. And they didn't appreciate how mixed up us old folks would get with those names. My wife usually goes through at least the first two before she gets to the right one. We were so glad that the other three, the three later ones, didn't follow this pattern. There can be all kinds of reasons for giving our children names, but at the end of the day, our name is simply a means of identifying us. It would be chaotic, wouldn't it, if everyone had the same name? Although I remember once when we went on holiday to the Greek island of Corfu, we learned that more than half the males on that island are called Stelios. And I seem to remember also a Monty Python sketch where everyone was Australian and they were all called Bruce. I wonder, too, if you're good at remembering names. I'm sometimes good and sometimes really terrible. Sometimes people tell me their names at once and I remember it, and others tell me, and within seconds, I've forgotten it. Don't I, Linda? At Shrewsbury, you weren't listening there, were you? I saw you. At Shrewsbury, when I stood at the door at the end of the service and people filed past to shake hands, I would find that I would remember all their names, and then suddenly my mind would go blank and I would forget the name of someone that I had known for years. And it was really embarrassing, especially if it was my wife. Now, in Bible times, names meant much more than they do in our modern Western society. In Bible days, a person's name was meant to be a description of their character and personality. And if your name didn't match your personality, your name would be changed. And you can see that with a number of people in the Bible whose names were changed. Simon became Peter, Saul became Paul, and so on. Now, Christmas is almost upon us again. And as we were hearing this morning here in Central Baptist, there are all kinds of services to celebrate Christmas. In the schools, the nativity plays, the carol services, the concerts, the Christingle services, etc. And one of the things that I've discovered over the years in my own ministry is that the nature of most of our Christmas events means there's just usually time for a kind of soundbite of the Christmas message. It's all about angels and shepherds and wise men, and it's easy to miss out some of the equally important aspects of the Christmas story. And one of those significant things is the fact that hundreds of years before Jesus was born came prophecies about his coming that were powerful, meaningful. And one of those is found in that passage that we read a few moments ago from Isaiah chapter 9. Hundreds of years before the event, Isaiah prophesies that Jesus would be born, that he would come from Galilee, that he would come as a baby, that he would be a light in the darkness, that he would be a descendant of King David, that he would establish a new kingdom. And Isaiah gives him a name, or rather four names, by which he would be known. And these names would describe what Jesus would be like. And this morning, for a few minutes before we have communion together, I want to just talk about those names that Isaiah gave to Jesus. First of all, he calls him Wonderful Counselor. I love the fact that the first word Isaiah uses to describe Jesus is wonderful. It's one of those words that has lost so much of its meaning by overuse and familiarity, isn't it? I mean, we describe all kinds of things as wonderful. We talk about a wonderful film or a wonderful goal or a wonderful holiday, maybe even a wonderful service. And it just means that it was really good. But the literal meaning, of course, is full of wonder. In other words, it describes something that is actually amazing, goes beyond what anyone would expect or imagine. And that really is what Jesus is like, isn't it? He is amazing. He was amazing in his conception. He was amazing in his birth, the fact, not the circumstances. He was amazing in his life, human but sinless. He was amazing in his teaching. He was amazing in his miracles. He was amazing in his death, dying for the sins of the world. He was amazing in his resurrection. He was amazing in his power to bring us salvation. And he will be amazing when he comes again, and every eye will see him and every knee will bow to him. If ever there is a word that truly describes Jesus, it's this one: wonderful. I wonder if that's how you see him this morning. But notice the description is a little bit more than that. It's Wonderful Counselor. What is a counselor? Well, there could be lots of definitions, but I think the best is something like this. A real counselor is someone who comes alongside, who listens, who understands, who empathizes, who encourages, and who enables us to be who we are meant to be. If any of you have ever had counseling or done counseling, these are the kind of things that are involved. And to me, that is also a lovely description of Jesus. He comes alongside. What did he say? I will never leave you or forsake you. He listens. He understands. Why? Because he totally identified with us in all aspects, like us as a human being. He empathizes. He has experienced all kinds of human emotions. He cried, he laughed, he suffered. He encourages us. He forgives us totally and lifts us up when we fall down. And he enables us to be who we are meant to be. I will make you become, he says. And I wonder this morning, you may feel as you come to church that nobody really understands your situation. Nobody really cares. Maybe you even feel that you're a failure and there's no future. But Jesus is the wonderful counselor. He does understand and he does care. Wonderful counselor. What a beautiful name. The second name that Isaiah gives to Jesus is Mighty God. And if the first name is essentially a description of his humanity, Wonderful Counselor, the second is a description of his divinity. And this is one of the things that makes this Christian faith of ours so unique. I believe in this multi-faith society that we're living in today, we need to grasp again the uniqueness of our Christian faith. For so many, the idea of God is of some great being that is out there, far away, remote, mysterious, and inaccessible. And therefore, for some, this being is dangerous and frightening and unpredictable and unknowable. But as Christians, we believe in something called the incarnation. And that simply means that God became a human being and yet in every essential way remained God. Listen, the tiny, frail, fragile baby who came in such poverty and simplicity to a peasant girl and her carpenter husband, who grew up in a tiny corner of a remote Middle Eastern country, who died alongside two common criminals, was actually God. God in a human body, the ultimate act of identification, the creator becoming the created, the divine becoming human, the eternal coming into time, the maker of the universe coming to a place in it. There are lots of ways that people have tried to describe and define all this. I want to share some with you. How about this one? See if you can understand this one. I can't, but I'll share it anyway. He who never began to be, but eternally existed, and who continued to be what he eternally was, began to be what he eternally was not. You got that one? Okay, try this one. Jesus is God spelling himself out in language that men can understand. Or maybe something like this. In Jesus, divine omnipotence moved in a human arm. In Jesus, divine wisdom was cradled in a human brain. In Jesus, divine love throbbed in a human heart. In Jesus, divine compassion glistened in a human eye. In Jesus, divine grace poured forth in human lips. Mighty God. Personally, I like this one. Christmas means that he descended that we might ascend. He became poor that we might become rich. He was born that we might be born anew. He became a servant that we might become sons and daughters. He had no home that we might have a home in heaven. He was hungry that we might be fed. He was thirsty that we might be satisfied. He was stripped that we might be clothed. He was forsaken that we might belong. He was sad that we might become glad. He was bound that we might go free. He was made sin that we might be made righteous. He died that we might live. He came down that we might be caught up. That is Jesus. In these and many other statements and phrases, what is happening is an attempt to describe the indescribable. All we can say is this, that in Jesus, God came among us and identified with us. He is the mighty God. If you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. And then the third name is Everlasting Father. And of the four descriptions in Isaiah here, this is the one that we have most difficulty with because Jesus was never a father. Unless you happen to believe some of the rubbish that people write about him and Mary Magdalene. He is a son of God. He's described himself as a son of man, but he never fathered a child. So did Isaiah get it wrong? Was he not concentrating when God spoke to him about this? Did he misunderstand? We have to remember something. It's what I said at the beginning about a name. In the Bible, a name is essentially a description of character rather than a literal biological connotation. And so when Isaiah is calling Jesus Everlasting Father, he's simply saying, first of all, that Jesus is eternal. He existed with God the Father in the beginning and will be there for all eternity. But also, listen, that he has all the good characteristics and qualities of fatherhood. 19 years ago, this past week, was when my dad died. And I still often think of him. I even sometimes dream of him and my mom. And I suppose distance lends enchantment a little bit, but when I think of my dad, I do so with great admiration and great affection. To me, he was a great dad. Never owned a house, never owned a car, was never in debt. He was my dad. He was protective. He was always concerned for my health and safety. Are you warm enough, son? He was generous. You could never outdo him in what you gave. He would have given me his last penny. He was supportive. When I was a boy, he would come on a cold winter's morning and stand in the touchline and watch me playing football for the school. He was practical. He made me things, a board for my train set, a round table for my toy nights. He had time. We went for walks together. At home, he played Sabutio with me and Shove Halfpenny. And outside, he showed me how to golf and how to fish. And above all, he was there. A great dad. And I want to suggest to you this morning, these are the things you find in Jesus. He is protective. What does it say? We will never be tested beyond our endurance. He puts his arms around us. He is generous. He gave everything for us. He is supportive. Because of his love, he wants the best for us. He is practical. He has given us the Holy Spirit to live within us and enable us to live this Christian life. He has time. He's never called away. Whenever you pray, wherever you are, whatever your circumstances, he is there and he is listening. And he is there. I am with you always, even to the close of the age. These great words in that hymn sum up, don't they? Father-like, he tends and spares us. Well our feeble frame he knows. In his hands he gently bears us, rescues us from all our foes. Praise him widely as his mercy flows. And that father-like nature is eternal. It will never cease. He will always be like that because Jesus has the name that is the description, Everlasting Father. And then finally, the fourth name that Isaiah gives to the one who's going to come on Christmas Day is the Prince of Peace. I like these words that were written by someone called Howard Thurmond. When the song of the angels is silent, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are again tending their sheep, when the manger is darkened and still, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among people, to befriend the lonely, to release the prisoner, to make music in the heart. The work of Christmas has begun. And one of the common objections that people raise to becoming Christians is the statement that Christianity has been the cause of countless wars and bloodshed. And there's no doubt that there has been so much cruelty and bloodshed carried out in the name of religion. But I want to say to you this morning that violence, war, and bloodshed is never a description of Christianity. It is a distortion of Christianity. And the teaching of Jesus and the example of Jesus and the command of Jesus is all about peace, that we should be peacemakers. And the fact is that when we really put what Jesus says into practice, he enables that to happen. First of all, as the Prince of Peace, he enables us to have peace with God. That's what our salvation brings us. The message of reconciliation. God and me separated because of my sin, but because of the cross, because of Jesus, brought together, reconciled. Peace with God. Also, he enables us to have peace with ourselves. I don't have to feel guilty anymore because as far as the east is from the west, he has removed my transgressions from me. I can live with myself. I'm at peace with myself. And then from the first two, peace with God, peace with myself, he enables me to be at peace with you, for us to be at peace with one another. Because he enables us to truly love one another. The Prince of Peace, the one who brings peace. At the dramatic moment when World War II ended, General Douglas MacArthur spoke the first words of peace to a waiting world. He said this, "Today the guns are silent. The skies no longer rain death. The seas bear only commerce. Men everywhere walk upright in the sunlight. The entire world is quietly at peace. A new era is upon us." But the new era didn't last. Because peace doesn't come simply from the absence of war, but only when people turn to the Prince of Peace. And that was the name given to Jesus. I wonder if you found your peace in him. What's in a name? Name above all names. For Jesus, hundreds of years before, Isaiah got a picture that described him and gave him these names: Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. What a Christmas season this will be for us if we really appreciate and experience Jesus in those wonderful descriptions. Jesus, what a wonderful name. Amen.